Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Watershed is one of the most successful and well-loved bands ever to come out of South Africa. This multi-platinum selling band have released 7 studio albums so far, along with the Greatest Hits album during their career, as well as receiving 2 South African Music Awards for Best Pop Album and a South African Music Award nomination for Best Adult Contemporary Album. Since their breakthrough single in 2000 with Indigo Girl, the band have built their way up to be one of the most respected and decorated bands to come out of the southern tip of Africa. Their distinctive melodic guitar sounds blend with the sultry tones of lead singer and songwriter Craig Hines' voice to create a soothing and classic rock sound that is easily recognizable and yet utterly unique. Their albums and singles have consistently been rewarded with gold and platinum status both locally and abroad. The band recently released the single Little Hero, collaborating with the David Gresham Record Company and the Little Hero Foundation. Across South Africa, millions of dogs are born into hardship, not because they are unwanted, but due to a lack of education, sterilization, and veterinary care. Dan Ofrichter founded the Little Hero Foundation to address this problem, focusing on mass sterilization and working with trusted organizations on the ground. Up next on Celeb Savant, joining us for a second time, catching up since we last spoke and discussing the recent collaboration with the David Gresham Record Company and the Little Hero Foundation, is Craig Hines from Watershed.
Where are you in the world and how are you doing?
I am currently in South Africa, in the Western Cape, and more particularly the South Peninsula, which is the Musenberg, Fishick side, False Bay side. And just kicking back.
Second time on Celeb Savant. It was about 4 years ago. I remember you were in the first batch of guests. In the last 4 years, what's been happening in your world?
So that sounds like we probably chatted shortly after the release of what would be our, I think, 8th album. It was the Elephant in the Room album.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I think that we're probably chatting about that. So since then, we haven't actually released another studio record. We released a single called This Town in between then and now. But, you know, during these couple of years, we've been working on a lot of new material. I think we just want to get that right. We want to figure out what the, I think it's going to be the 10th one now, a 9 or 10, including the best of back in 2010. Yeah, we just want to make sure the songs are right and trying to figure out, navigate the industry all the time because it's forever changing. And how you do things, social media, your digital platforms and all that sort of thing. So we just want to make sure that A, the songs are right, and B, make sure that we understand how we're going to release it and how we want to do it. But besides that, it's been touring, and we've done a lot of touring. We tour all the time. So we had an incredible December. Now we've had a lot of incredible Decembers. We've done a couple of trips to Europe to market some records over there. And yeah. But just carrying on, it's been very cool.
You referenced that you went to Europe to market some records there. What is the difference between marketing a record locally in South Africa compared to the overseas market?
I suppose the big difference for us is, we're pretty well established here in South Africa. So things feel a little easier. We understand radio. We understand our sort of fans, our supporters, our friends. So we sort of figure it out a lot easier. The territories we perform in over there are German, sort of majority German speaking. We've had some big hits over there over the years. There, it's very much about we need to be on the road. You've got to be on the road a lot. You've got to choose the right venues. And it's just about trying to refresh all the time. You've got to go over there and make sure that, you know, you sort of remain relevant. So that's the hardest part. And then it's also trying to navigate their radio and that sort of thing. I mean, if I look at our Spotify and that, cities like Berlin and Hamburg are still amongst our biggest listenership comes from those cities. And obviously where there's a slight language barrier, which makes a small difference, but nothing too serious. As I say, it is easier here But it's important that we have those territories as well.
You referenced that navigation and understanding of the landscape at the moment. How are you feeling it?
I think the most obvious thing, that I feel we're touring a lot more now than we've ever toured. And one would think the older you get, the less you want to be on the road in a perfect world. But it seems that it's the other way around. And bands, and you can see bands are globally just touring all the time now. Everyone's touring. Bands are coming out the woodwork because they used to sit at home and sell CDs back in the day. And CD sales would make enough money for you to handpick your live performances. But with the massive change to digital, where the bands aren't making too much money unless you are a multi-million band that's streaming at that sort of level, yeah, you need to tour. Yeah, I mean, there are royalties associated with that, but it is different. But having said that, when you put out a song on Spotify, you do know that everyone around the world has got access to it, which is a cool thing. And I think that opens up other avenues for touring. I suppose that the one hand sort of still washes the other in some sort of way.
In South Africa, we don't have access, obviously, because there is no access because the shops have closed. I'm not sure if you are aware of the current stats. There's a massive uptick of physical around the world. I was reading an article in Variety in the US, $1.4 billion on vinyl sold, the biggest since 1983. Two years ago in the UK, there were 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1993. Last year in the UK, there's also a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. And based on these exchanges, which there has to be a high number every day, they monitor it for tax purposes. Because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in the basket. And the research of all of this is that it's the teenagers that are diving into this world, not the older nostalgic people. Then, as you referenced, we've had the Spotify and the DSPs. Understanding the rise of physical again, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, we were lucky enough to have experienced the physical side of sales. We were just behind the vinyl thing when you're talking the 80s. We only started in 2000. So we were slap bang in the middle of the CD rage, which was incredible for us. So we've experienced that. We're lucky enough to have felt that, where everything was easy to understand because a disc cost X amount and the label would keep X amount and we would make X amount. So we understand that side of it. We released Elephant in the Room. Having said that, we released Elephant in the Room on vinyl as well. It's quite costly. So I think if the label you with are printing your vinyls for you, that's great. I think for your average band to print vinyl is pretty expensive. I haven't heard or read too much about the CD side of things. If that's the case, I think we'd definitely be looking at that. You know, I suppose the difference was back in the day, people would have to go to a store and they'd choose their CDs and they would listen, and it was a big part of their monthly shop was selecting a band or two and going home and enjoying that music. You know, I suppose besides buying off your platforms, Amazon and wherever, Temu, whatever it might be, the physical side of purchasing music, it's still, for me, it seems fairly remote. But I suppose, you know, listening to you now, it would be something to investigate the CD side of things and possibly put the new songs on vinyl as well.
Do you think the listening audience need to have more of an understanding of what's happening? I'll explain to you. I teach spinning classes and I decided for fun to do a few focus groups. So I did a focus group of 10 people, a focus group of 8 people, and a focus group of 3 people. Cross age, cross diverse, cross culture, and all those other labels. And I said to all these groups of people, I said to them, if an artist has had 100 million streams, how much money do they think that the artist got in their back pocket? The first group of people said 50 million. The second group of people said 1 million. And the third group of people said 300,000 to 20 million. I said, actually, no, it's more like 1,000 or 2,000. They were all shocked and horrified. I do know Ray. I do know Snoop Dogg. They've all been speaking out about it. Also, Lily Allen. I remember reading an article a little while ago. Now, she's got 8 million monthly followers on Spotify, and she's making more money selling pictures of her feet on OnlyFans than she's making of her money on Spotify. Again, you referenced earlier that you can see that you sell booming in those various cities and allows you as a business card to say, okay, we can go tour there. So do you think that's enough, or do you think the listening audience needs to understand more what's going on?
Yeah, and it's interesting you did that, because still the biggest conversation I have with people, if you're out for a braai or a dinner party or having a coffee in the morning, everyone's interested in how it all works now. And they're all aware of somewhere in this mix, they're sort of aware that they've heard that bands aren't earning as much as they were. But no one really knows exactly. And it's a big part of those conversations. And 9 out of 10 of those conversations, they go away going, wow, I didn't actually know that. The amount of money earned is so little. And what makes it even more difficult for the artist is how the money is split from the label and to all these platforms. If you had to think about it, you take a song like Indigo Girl. So it's released obviously everywhere. I really just get a royalty that talks about Indigo Girl as a song. But this song has been, money's coming in from everywhere. And you can't really get clear answers as to where it's coming from and exactly how much it is and what the splits are and what the, yeah, it's pretty vast. And I think a lot of bands, you know, really what you want to do is make music and be famous. But at the end of the day, I think the admin behind the sort of way that people are consuming music is very difficult for anyone to understand, especially the bands. I mean, and for us to try and get a handle on it is hectic. And I think bands just realize that, you know, to try and get straight answers is, it's not easy. And so you hit the road, you know, and you go and make music and you play music.
What do you love about performing live?
I think live is how you start. When we started, it was never about having success. You have no idea. People form bands because they want to be in a band, you want to play music, and you want to get free beer. And there's a whole lot of reasons why you start. Yeah, and I think when it sort of clicks over and you realize that, you know, that whole thing is actually a lot of fun and you get a song away on radio, it's great. But the reason why I think you enjoy it is because of that live thing. Picking up a guitar, you've got your band around you, you walk onto a stage, there's people there to watch. You look at emotions, you look at the way people are responding to the song, and then you answer questions afterwards and you have a beer with people. And, you know, that's a big part of the live side. Obviously, as you get more and more successful, it becomes heavier, it becomes a bigger machine that has to stay oiled and it's got to keep on moving and it costs a lot more money. But, you know, everything sort of comes out the other side. Yeah, the live thing is amazing. I think a lot of the new artists need to realize that, you know, your social media is great and you might have loads of followers, but at the end of the day, you want people to come and watch you and you want to feel the energy of what music does on a physical level, you know. And I think that for me and Watershed is our biggest joy, is actually getting out, getting onto a stage. When you get off after 2 hours, it's the best 2 hours you've had that week. Yeah, so that's the live side.
Okay, so I'm that guy right up in front, and I've seen you at a couple of festivals and shows, and I'm dancing, I'm jamming. I'll take my cell phone out for maybe one or two videos, one or two photos, and I'll put it away. I notice these days a lot of people are videoing and tweeting and posting and. From your perspective as a person on a stage, seeing a bunch of phones compared to faces or eyes, you reference that energy exchange, that reference seeing those emotions. Do you not feel that the phone takes away from that, or it's just where society is at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely it does. But unfortunately, we all get sucked into the social media side of it. So you'd be doing yourself a disservice if you said no phones at shows, because at the end of the day, that's really what you're getting out of it nowadays. That's your social media. You want to see via social media that people have watched you and they've shared 1,000 times with 1,000 of their friends. So I suppose it's sort of a catch-22. You know, you want people to sit down and watch for an hour and a half and really take in all the stories. And, you know, often you're telling a story between songs and someone's sending that video they've just done of the previous song. So they're missing that whole one song to the next and what the next song's about. But you're definitely not going to tell them to put their phones away, because 90% of the industry is social media now. So you're caught between a rock and a hard place. So you've got to try and balance that out. As I said right in the beginning of this chat, is that it's a very interesting time at the moment in the music world, and it's trying to navigate that my biggest stress in my life is not writing a new song. It's not making sure Watershed are playing amazing shows. That's the easy part. And that takes up 5% of what we actually do. The stressful part is putting the social media together, you know, and wondering and hoping and thinking and trying and guessing that you're going to somehow crack the right post. It's very difficult to understand. And it almost takes your breath away when you think about that side of it, that why has it become so important? Surely this should be about writing great songs.
Yes.
And great live shows. And I think it's a big part of that. It gives it a sort of a heaviness, but you keep going, because luckily that 5% is strong enough. That 5% of songwriting and performing overshadows the other stuff. It's navigating, and it's just getting out there, you know.
And I mean, I've given up trying to figure out the numbers. I'm like, this one is going to do so well, and the other person has agreed on the collaboration, and they've got big followers, and like, I just post, and whatever happens, happens. I couldn't be bothered anymore. Like, I used to look at the numbers, and if someone stopped following on Instagram, why have they stopped following, and what have I done wrong, and I'm like, no, stop it. It's too much for my brain to handle.
You just put my anxiety back.
I'm sorry. Okay, so let's focus then and tell us about this collaboration with Gresham, and it's the Little Hero Foundation. How did it come to be? Tell us the whole story.
So I was having a lunch with a friend and Dan, and we were chatting about music and songs, and he said, I want to start this foundation. You know, we both animal lovers. So we were chatting about dogs, and he was chatting about his dog called Bailey that passed away, and how Bailey was his little hero, he was saying. And I was like, well, this is an amazing foundation. And I said, have you thought about putting a song with this foundation? He was like, no, not really, but this is what he wants to do. And he told me the whole history of it. And I was sort of blown away by the actually going and attacking, approaching the root problem that is happening, which is there are thousands of dogs, and everyone's begging for you to go and adopt a dog and a cat and all of these things. And this will keep happening because the level of sterilization is, it happens, but it's very small and very slow. And you'd get a fundraising group that raise a little bit of money, and 10 dogs are sterilized. While those 10 dogs are getting sterilized, another 100 are being born. And Dan's foundation is about doing the sterilizations on a big scale. So it's sort of mass sterilization. And so by sterilizing one dog right down the line, it leads to, if that dog wasn't sterilized, it would lead to hundreds, if not thousands of dogs in the space of a couple of years. And it's about just attacking that root cause, and as I say, sterilizing on a global scale, choosing areas, choosing communities, moving in with many vets, and actually doing a mass sterilization. And I just thought this was, you know, us being animal lovers, it was like, that's why when I'm driving around and I see just dogs on the side of the road walking around, I'm just like, kills me, and that shouldn't be happening. And so this whole thing has to get everything under control, and once it's under control, we can then control it. So we started chatting about a possible song, and I wrote a song called Little Hero a couple of years ago. And the idea was about your animal being your hero. And this just all fitted perfectly with the Little Hero Foundation, which Dan put together. So we then just got chatting, and we recorded the song. And yeah, it's been very exciting. So the rollout is happening now. Obviously, Watershed are then very closely associated to the foundation, and very proud to be a part of it. It's been cool, and I suppose, you know, it's one thing to get involved with charities and foundations. Over the years, we've been involved with many, but I think you have to really choose them well and be dedicated to that, because you can just join any foundation and say, oh, I support all these foundations, but really you want to be a part of it and push the agenda of the Little Hero Foundation.
So the other question I have is, or observation, is that a lot of people take on pets thinking, oh, it's a pet, it's like a fluffy toy. They don't realize this thing is live and moving and has to be looked after and is like a child. And then because of that, there's a lot of disregard for the animals, which yes, really is like upsetting. I'd love to get an animal, but I know for the fact that I'm not in the place or time or energy to completely support the animal. So therefore, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to be selfish and get one and then allow the animal to not be present 100%. For anyone who's struggling with that thought of like, I've got a pet now and I can't give it my all and they don't know what to do. I mean, I know you're not a vet or you're not a potentially an expert. From your experience of being an animal lover, what advice would you give those people?
Well, yeah, it is. I think you've got to really, when you're making a decision on getting a pet or, getting a puppy or getting an older animal, you know, when you're making those decisions, you've got to really think carefully because they are incredibly demanding. You realize that you are 1,000% responsible for their happiness. We can sort of get out of a place and we can figure it out, but a dog and a cat can't. It's such an obvious thing that these decisions have got to really be thought through properly. You know, and I think what I've found with a lot of the adoption dog agencies is they actually are asking really, really strict questions, which is great. They want to come to the house. You've got to send the videos of your house, of your garden. They are almost insisting that the dog sleeps on your bed, which is fantastic. I think you've just got to realize that it's tricky and you've got to understand that the responsibility is huge. So that would be the first thing. It's just make sure you're going to look after that little thing really well, because there's nothing worse than seeing an abused animal. As much as it's sort of indirect, the Little Hero Foundation has a direct impact on too many dogs being on the street and being mistreated. So that's the thing. Just make sure you are willing to put in 100% into that pet.
Is there a way that anyone can support the Little Hero Foundation? Is there a website they can check out?
You can go in. I think the first thing would be to just to follow the Little Hero Foundation. So go give the song a spin. Yeah, and if you follow it, things will come through. We'll have drives. We'll have launches. Where Watershed will be performing. And I just think it's going to be a super thing. You know, we have some nice funders behind the project as we speak, but I feel this foundation, it's going to be very active and we're hoping to reach a lot of people. And we'll be running various things during the course of the years to come. And yeah, as you mentioned, Gresham earlier, for them getting involved is really cool. So yeah, it's a good team. And I think it's sort of with a good idea and a good concept and a good team, I think it should be a fantastic foundation to be a part of.
Following them on socials would be Little Hero Foundation. That people will be able to find it like that.
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure if it's the Little Hero Foundation or Little Hero. I think okay. It's the... but yeah, you'll see it there. It's sort of like a white poster with LHF on it. And that's the one. I say, if you listen to the song, you'll know it's that thing because I'll be singing.
So great foundation, great something to support. Now, Craig, I know we played this game last time, playing it again. Top of mind, if once we finish this conversation, you want to go away and listen to five other artists, who would those five artists be?
Stereophonics, REM, Radiohead, some of the new Counting Crows stuff. And I would probably want to listen to one of the newer guys on the block who's out there. Can't think of anything new guys.
Craig, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Well, just thank you for the chat, first of all. We're in an industry that is forever moving and adapting. But the thing that glues it all together is the love of music.
Yeah,
and so no matter what's out there, whatever challenge you experiencing with the way it works and how it works, it's to know that at the end of the day, you're in it for music, you're in it for songwriting, for performing, and that's the part that you must love, and that's the part that keeps you waking up in the morning.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.